from the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast. This is Ag Day.
Now, one program is creating a bond between people and animals in the country.
I'm Charles Denny, student at the University of Tennessee's Herbert College of Agriculture. The Block and Bridle Club pair with fellow UT students who are facing challenges, and together they show livestock.
It's a tale of two planting seasons.
We're actually finished planting corn.
The latest on where planting is already moving toward the finish line and where it's hardly started. As a new cattle on feed report adds fuel to the cattle market fire.
It was still a little bit of a disappointing number, right? And the spreads reflect that.
A breakdown of the numbers right now on Ag Day.
Ag Day, presented by Pioneer. What's next happens when the name on the cap matches the power of one's purpose. Pioneer, what's next happens here.
Good morning, I'm Clinton Griffiths. The cattle market making more gains on Monday, fueled by a new cattle on feed report. The USDA report shows that the industry continues to see increasingly tight supplies of cattle. Ag Day's Michelle Rook joins us with a breakdown of the numbers. Michelle?
Clinton, the on-feed number was 1.5% above a year ago at 11.8 million head, while placements came in 12.3% below a year ago and below expectations, so that was a bullish figure. Meanwhile, the marketing's number was down 14%, also below expectations, but market analysts say that was reflective of the tight numbers. The 88% placement number is an indication of one of the smallest inventories in 73 years. However, the state-by-state breakouts also show cattle are moving from the south to the north, with the Iowa placement number at 96% and Nebraska at 94%, which exceeds the south.
Texas placements at 80% of a year ago, 80. Kansas at 87, Colorado at 87. You know, begs the question of why. You know, I'm always kind of an anti-formula, pro-negotiated trade guy. But I think they've had some challenges with feed cost. I think they've had some issues even with, being able to, a lot of people I talked to down there, they said, well, we don't buy cattle unless they work.
The report also shows feedlot inventory of steers at 7.3 million was up 2% from the previous year. Heifers made up 38.5% of the total inventory. That's up 1.1% from last year, but down 1.2% from the previous month. Still above the 10-year average, though. Now, Coima says it shows her rebuilding is still not happening.
And then when you get the quarterly data on this report, where you get to see what the heifers and steer ratio is, still placing a ton of heifers, still have a ton of heifers on feed. So it would appear that if retention started, it was just started now, because it's not showing up on the reports yet.
The marketing's number was below expectations at only 86%, which is a bit negative, but put it into context.
First of all, it's because there was two less market days compared to a year ago. So that amounts to about 10%. So if it would have been 100, it would have been 90. Does that make sense? But it was still below guesses. So it was still a little bit of a disappointing number, right? And the spreads reflect that.
He says the North is not backing up cattle, and the marketing's number indicates since there are less cattle to feed, they're likely being held and finished to heavier weights. I'm Michelle Rook reporting for Ag Day.
All right, thanks, Michelle. Many farmers have been seeing sunny skies and better soil moisture levels, which is helping to drive planting right now. And USDA releasing its latest crop progress report on Monday, it says 12% of the nation's corn crop is now in the ground. That's 2% ahead of the five-year average. North and South Dakota, only 1% planted, along with Michigan. As for soybeans, 8% are now planted. That's double the average. Planting hasn't even started yet in the Dakotas as well as Minnesota. It seems to be a tale of two planting seasons. Some farmers in Missouri, Kansas, and Iowa say they've already finished planting corn, and that's the earliest on record. Jeff Kelzer farms in northern Kansas. Even though he saw rain last week, the wind has been so strong, it dried fields out quickly. He told Ag Day he finished planting corn last week.
The last few years, we've been kind of right around this time frame getting done. when I was younger, we always used to want to start planting April 20th, and now all of a sudden we're wanting to get done by April 20th. So it's really changing.
Now, Jeff says he hasn't started soybeans just yet, but he says his biggest concern this year is how dry it is. He says creeks aren't running and there aren't wet spots in the field this year to plant around. Meanwhile, in the northern plains, farmers have seen some delays. We spoke with a South Dakota farmer who's seen a lot of dryness lately.
We're going into probably one of the driest springs we've had in quite a while. Last year we had 2 feet of snow on the ground yet about this time, and then all of a sudden about the 26th of April it melted and it was gone. The subsoil is fairly depleted, I think, so we're going to be down to needing timely rains just like we've had the last 3 years.
And that area recently did get a couple inches of rain, so hopefully they'll be out planting in the field very soon. And rain and colder weather in portions of the Midwest could keep farmers out of the field. Meteorologist Matt Engelbrecht has an update there.
As we talked about last week, coming up for your Tuesday, it's more of a weak clipper system that is going to bring about some showers, maybe a rumble of thunder in and through parts of the Midwest. The other part of the story is going to be a ridge of high pressure building in across the United States on the other side of our Tuesday and Wednesday. So there's Tuesday at 7 a.m. Just some light showers working through portions of the Midwest, may pick up a quarter to half an inch of rainfall, and it's just a classic clipper system. Now, temperatures will be coming down behind it on Wednesday, one of the coolest days into the Midwest, and up here towards the Northeast, it's going to be on Wednesday and Thursday. And as we mentioned last week, the lines start to scoop back up here to the north. Ridge of high pressure starting to dominate a large portion of the United States and will continue Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Now, the one caveat with this forecast, typically with the ridge of high pressure, you don't get a lot of cloud cover or rain. This is going to be a little different as there are going to be some isolated showers underneath the ridge, but severe weather threat remains low. Again, this Thursday at 9 p.m. And Miles Smith shared a picture with us earlier this month of his planting progress in Fairfax, Missouri. Now here's a close-up look at how his corn crop is coming along. That's really close up. And so far, so good. I'll have more on your forecast coming up.
Despite a strong end of the western snowpack, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation says farmers along the California-Oregon border will get 1/7 of their annual water allotment. That region is part of the Klamath River watershed. The Bureau didn't release any water to irrigators in 2021 and now says that farmers will see allocations fall further if they divert water illegally. Officials say the water has to be kept at certain levels to protect endangered fish species. Now, the drought monitor shows about 28% of Oregon is in some level of drought or dryness. Last year, it was 83%. Grains starting the week in the green, led by a double-digit rise in Chicago wheat. We'll talk markets next. And later, a college club is helping teach kids about livestock, lessons both sides are learning today in the country.
Ag Day is brought to you by Germinator Closing Wheels. Germinator Steel Closing Wheels provides a 13 bushel advantage per acre in no-till and a 7 bushel advantage per acre in conventional. Do you have enough room in your bin to switch to the Germinator?
One company is looking to grow in the U.S. when it comes to providing insect protein in animal feed. Innova Feed just opened its North American Insect Innovation Center in Decatur, Illinois. The French company says the pilot plant is its first step in expanding into North America as it aims to scale up production and commercialization of insect protein here in the U.S. The company breeds black soldier flies in indoor farms. It then repurposes ag byproducts from ADM to yield insect meal, oil, and a soil product. It says future opportunities with other types of animal feed are also being explored with ADM. The company says so far it has secured more than $1 billion in commercial contracts for its fly protein products for the aquaculture, pet food, and poultry feed markets. Wheat started the week out with big gains on cold weather concerns in the U.S. along with the Black Sea region. Michelle Rook is back with more on that in Markets Now.
It was a higher day on Monday in both grain and livestock futures trade. Joining us, Jim McCormick with AgMarket.net. And Jim, really felt like one of the first risk-on days we've had for a while.
You nailed it, Michelle. It was definitely a risk-on day. It was kind of nice to see on a Monday. A lot of different storylines that are pushing this market forward. Weather issues here in the United States, weather issues as well in other parts of the world. The fund position carrying a record short, or excuse me, a near record short for this time of year. It all kind of, you know, combined together to get a nice bid. And it's all one of the better Mondays we've seen in quite a bit.
Yeah, no doubt. We kind of led the charge over in the grain complex, and that was kind of a combination of both weather and maybe some war premium, wasn't it?
You got it. There's four different storylines I think we're looking at, Michelle. First one, we are dry in the U.S. plains, so that is helping support the wheat. The other thing, we've got some dryness issues going on in the Black Sea region, as Ukraine as well as Russia is worried about some dryness issues. Then on top of it, in the Ukraine over the weekend, Russia went after one of their ports, which has got people worried that maybe Russia is going to go after more infrastructure. The more infrastructure they damage, the harder it is going to get that product out. And then lastly, a story that came out on Friday, I think that could have a major implication potentially down the line, is India. India came out and said their wheat stocks are now at 16-year lows. They've been pushing a lot of wheat out as a way to drive down food prices during a presidential election year. But with them doing that, it really puts the pressure on them to have a good wheat crop. If their crop would start to stumble, Michelle, look for India to come into the world market and start bidding up to try to control domestic prices.
So then did corn and soybeans basically follow the wheat market?
I think it was no doubt about it. They were followers. Technically, though, the market kind of held some support. We took out some moving average resistance in the corn, and that started tripping some short covering. Remember, Michelle, the funds are carrying not quite as short a position they were earlier in the spring, but for this time of year, it is a massive short position. And as these markets start taking out technical resistance, I think it's going to force the fund's hands to go ahead and just kind of throw their, you know, throw their hands up in the air and say enough's enough, start to lighten up on the short position. Remember, normally this time of year, they're actually a little bit long. So a short covering rally could be expected, especially if the headlines continue to be bullish.
Okay, Jim, let's hope we can get a longer sustained rally out of this as a result. Thanks so much for joining us, Jim McCormick with AgMarkets. Now we'll have more Ag Day coming up.
To contact Jim McCormick at AgMarket, call 844-4-AG-MARKET or visit their website at www.agmarket.net.
Watch Markets Now with Michelle Rook on the Farm Journal YouTube channel, keeping you updated throughout the day on the markets at the open, midday, and close. Find out what moved the markets today and what to expect the market to do next.
Here's a look at what we have regarding that forecast that we looked at it earlier, a couple of pockets of some rain coming up on Tuesday with a weak clipper system, a very isolated chance of some isolated thunderstorms, possibly strong to severe. There's the list of severe weather risks in these areas, but again, just a few strong, possibly severe storms, but very small coverage with that threat. And that's going to be kind of the norm going forward. As you'll see with the jet stream, the way things are going to be placed across the United States, it's more about a ridge of high pressure than any kind of severe weather outbreak. Now, this is all the way into our Saturday and Sunday, and I want to show you as we get into next Monday, pause it right here, the ridge that is now on the west east coast that is going to be working across the United States all week long. So once that weak clipper system is out of here later on tonight and Wednesday, now for the Northeast, it's more like Wednesday into Thursday morning, this ridge is going to be around Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Even into Monday, we're starting to see the early hints of that pretty dominant ridge on the East Coast, which could bottle things up and bring about more quiet weather into next Monday and Tuesday. And this is a week from today, next Monday and Tuesday. Next piece of energy is right back up here to the Northeast. So storm systems, the way I'm seeing this jet stream kind of unfold, at least now until the weekend and possibly into next week, would result in a quiet pattern. That does not mean it won't rain, won't get any clouds, but in terms of widespread severe weather, I'm not seeing a system that is supported by the jet stream. Again, we still have to watch this and monitor it as we go forward. And as I mentioned, there is going to be still some rain associated with this pattern, just not any of these widespread heavy downpours impacting a large portion of the United States. This is going to be rather spotty as this map starts to fill in. This is Thursday at 7 p.m. So all the green back up here to the north and the northeast, that's our clipper system. So Tuesday night, Wednesday, a little bit into Thursday for the northeast. And then underneath the ridge, Wednesday and into Thursday night may get a few stronger thunderstorms. But notice in terms of just coverage, this isn't a big system by any means. But if you get caught under it, you could be looking at a heavier downpour, possibly some isolated severe weather as well. Snowfall estimate. Just want to show you this is, kind of an idea of where we are now. Just a sliver back up into Canada with the snowfall estimate that's going all the way through our Tuesday and also a little bit into our Wednesday. We'll start off with Park, Michigan, near Grand Rapids. Cloudy, 57 degrees, low of about 36. Park, Minnesota. You got, no highs and no lows, but there are going to be some showers around in Minnesota. And how about South Dakota? Park, South Dakota, 62, low of 33.
We have an update on avian flu and dairy cattle next. And later, we're off to Tennessee, where college students are taking time to teach kids about animal care and how to compete in the show ring in the country. USDA is now confirming cow-to-cow transmission is a factor when it comes to the spread of avian flu in dairy herds, but it still doesn't know exactly how the virus is able to spread. While wild birds are believed to be the original source of the virus, USDA said in its investigation into the infections of dairy cattle that it found some cases where the virus spread was associated with cattle movements between herds. And it says there is evidence the virus spread from areas with dairy cattle, quote, back into nearby poultry premises through an unknown route, end quote. Now, the agency says cows shed the virus in milk at high concentrations, so anything that comes into contact with unpasteurized milk may spread it. USDA has not imposed any quarantines to restrict the movement of cattle around infected dairies. It also continues to say the nation's pasteurized milk supply is safe. There's been explosive growth when it comes to beef on dairy, but it also reportedly comes with an increasing amount of liver abscesses in crossbred cattle. Farm Journal's Dairy Herd reporting on this. It says for dairy producers, the common health issue doesn't necessarily have a big impact on their bottom line, but one meat scientist says the growing problem is costing packers time and money. He says the beef on dairy population is seeing liver abscess in 50% or more of animals, and it's holding up the production line. Carcasses with liver abscesses must have the organ removed manually by workers, and it must be inspected to see if the abscess has gotten into any other surrounding tissue. Now, according to one Michigan State Extension beef specialist, the liver issue represents an annual loss to the U.S. beef industry of more than $60 million. There are a lot of life lessons on the farm. Up next, how a college club is helping teach those lessons to younger kids through livestock projects. That story in the country. College students can share a lot together, and two groups are teaming up to raise animals together. The University of Tennessee's Charles Denny reports on this shared bond between people and animals.
Now entering the show ring, prize sheep led by their accomplished handlers. An opportunity in the arena limelight for both animals and humans to show how they've grown. The UT Block and Bridle Roundup is where hundreds of young animal owners display their sheep, pigs, and cattle. Ellery Hudsell is one of the proud presenters.
I'm going to be going and helping wash my sheep and get him blown out so that he's ready for the show and looks good.
Ellery raised this fella from lamb to sheep status, and they're pals now.
I gave him a name, and his name is Roy, why he's here.
Roy?
Roy, yeah.
Why'd you name him Roy? Is that for somebody?
Roy Rogers.
Okay.
Ellery is part of UT's post-secondary education future program. Here, young adults with disabilities make the transition from high school to adult life. They take classes and earn a vocational certificate from the university. The future students here are also now Block and Bridle members.
To get ready for this show, Block and Bridle members were paired with a UT future student to help them work with their lamb and teach them the responsibility of caring for an animal.
They've loved it. They've loved the animals. It's kind of like they're stepping into a whole new world.
Haley Ferguson with the UT Herbert College of Agriculture is one of the student leaders of Block and Bridle and this working partnership with the Future Program.
The students within the Future Program here at UT, they want job experience. They want the opportunity to build relationships with the animals that we have here on campus, and it kind of really gave them that opportunity and that chance to kind of grow these skills.
Kyle McLean with UTIA Animal Science is faculty advisor for Block and Bridle, a club that's been around the Ag campus nearly a century. He says the group tries to have an impact in the community and to promote livestock agriculture.
These kids really just love animal production and livestock production, and so they do a really nice job of exhibiting that and trying to spread the word as best they can.
Here you have connection and teamwork with a shared goal of learning from each other. From college, you get an education, but valued friendships are another bonus. This is Charles Denny reporting.
All right, thanks, Charles. And that's all the time we have this morning. We're sure glad you tuned in. From all of us here at Ag Day, I'm Quentin Griffiths. Have a great day.